This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
一同向和平進發，我哋係侯司長嘅 Pacifica KPFT 90.1 FM 90.1.
Mimi ni Pacifica, uhuru wa mazungumzo.
You can feed your family in KPFT too. KPFT partners with local grocery stores in neighborhoods near you. When you purchase your groceries using KPFT cards, you make a donation to the station. While those nutritious foods help build strong bodies, you can also nourish KPFT with thought-provoking programming. For more information, visit kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 314. Now your food dollars can become pennies for our thoughts at KPFT. Thank you from KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.
Ahlan wa sahlan and welcome to Arab Voices on Houston Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored, commercial-free, KPFT 90.1 FM, with live broadcast, podcast, and archive of previous shows online at both kpft.org and arabvoices.net. It's Wednesday, December 13, 2006. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices, along with my co-host Mark. Our guest today will be Sheikh Waleed Bassiouni, Imam of the Clear Lake Islamic Center, Director of the Texas Dawah Convention, Member of the North American Imam Federation and Assembly of Muslim Jurists in America, Fatwa and Research Committee, and Advisor to numerous Islamic organizations around the U.S. Imam Bassiouni will be talking with us about the upcoming Texas Dawah Convention titled Islam, a Light for the Ages. We will then listen to parts of a 3-hour documentary titled Israel and Palestine, The Human Cost of the Occupation, produced by Dr. Seema Gilani after her visit to Palestine and Israel as part of a delegation with the Jewish American Medical Project, a division of Visions of Peace with Justice in Israel-Palestine organization. We will also take your calls live, so please make a note of the phone number. It is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. And to allow time for both segments, we are skipping the news summary for today. And we will begin immediately with our first guest tonight, and that is Sheikh Waleed Bassiouni. As I mentioned, Sheikh Waleed Bassiouni is he's, by the way, a frequent guest speaker at universities, conventions, radio talk shows, television, interfaith meetings, and community centers nationally and internationally. He is a member of the North American Imam Federation, the Assembly of the Muslim Jurists in America, Fatwa and Research Committee, director of the Texas Dawah Convention, and advisor to numerous Islamic societies and organizations around the U.S. He graduated with a bachelor's in Islamic sciences, did his master's in Islamic theology, world religions, and modern religious sects, and he is currently working on his PhD coursework in Islamic sciences from Theological Graduate Foundation in Oxford. He is an instructor at the American Open University in Alexandria, Virginia, and at Al Maghrib Institute. Sheikh Waleed serves as the Imam of the Clear Lake Islamic Center. Sheikh Waleed, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to Arab Voices. Sheikh Waleed, can you hear us? Let's see if we can do some adjustments in our audio. Sheikh Waleed, can you hear us now?
Yes, I do.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to Arab Voices.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And thank you for having me in your show tonight. It's really
sure.
My pleasure.
Thank you for joining us. We wanted to talk about this upcoming convention that you are directing and you are overseeing, that convention, which is the Islamic or the Texas Dawah Convention. Tell us more about it, please.
Yes, inshallah, by God will, on the 22nd of December until the 26th of December, we will have the 6th annual convention, Islam, a Light for the Ages. And this held by Texas Dawah Convention. It will be in George Brown Center, downtown Houston, and Hilton America's Hotel in downtown. As I said, it's going to start on the 22nd until the 26th. I'm really pleased and honored to introduce to our community in Houston and Texas at large and nationally even this convention, this conference this year. We have been preparing for this for the whole year. We would love to provide all our attendees a comfortable, a beneficial, an enjoyable place and a safe and a brotherly environment so they can enjoy themselves during this holiday. There is around over 100 person work hard to make this convention a place where people really can have fun and can spend a quality time with their friends and their family. This basically conference has been designed in a way that appeals to all ages, from infants or to teens, youth, adults, both men and women, are very diverse speakers with their wide range of specialties, will, inshallah, also provide a lot of benefits and beneficial lectures to our crowd this year. There's a lot of activity will be going on in these 3 days at the conference. Not only just lectures, it's also a lot of activity and a lot of, say, our enjoyable entertainment programs in the night. You just name it. We have even rock climb during these days, a competition between Houston versus everybody else. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm sure that everybody will enjoy himself during these days.
Can you mention to us some of the conference titles or the topics that will be discussed and talked about during the conference?
Sure. We will have different kind of type of lectures. For example, we will have lectures such as, I'll start with the most unique ones. On Friday, an example, we're going to start on Friday night with an open session talking about religious liberty, free speech, and open government, discussing the First Amendment in the Constitution of the United States. For us as a minority, as a Muslim community, would like to know more about this, about the role of religion in public life. And this is, I think it's one of the hot issues these days, what exactly the role of religion in public life. We invited to this session different speakers, and some people maybe think it's only Muslims who are our speakers, good speakers, and that's not quite true. We do have a lot of our speakers can be from different backgrounds. For example, for this specific session, we'll have the executive director of the Christian Live Commission, the Baptist General Convention of Texas. She will be talking and addressing the our crowd, inshallah. Also, we'll have the executive director of the First Amendment Center coming and traveling to Houston to educate our community about this issue. We invited other guests as well, but we have not confirmed them yet. Plus the executive of Freedom and Justice Foundation, Mr. Muhammad Al-Biari, also will be joining us on this lecture. If you go during the days, we have different type of lecture. For instance, Sheikh Yasser Qadi will be talking about animal rights, and we hopefully also will have the wildlife protection to join him in this session, and we will try also to raise some funds to support them, to the support their activities. And we title that, in every living being there is a reward, as the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said. We have lectures, Muslims in humanities and social sciences, by one of our speakers, Musa McGuire. He will be talking about this issue. He's doing his PhD in this field, and he will be joining us also during this convention. We do have some psychologist, Sister Ashfana Haq. She will be talking about, she will be giving actually a family counseling to the family during the whole conference, counseling our sisters and our brothers if they have any difficulties in their life with their families or with their children. That's what she do for a living, and that's her area. What else? Well, we do have also Sheikh Isam Rajab, who is a local imam, will be also talking about giving several lectures, some of them directed to women, some of them directed to knowledge and the importance of seeking knowledge. We have a special lecture about history and how should we read history and in the right way by Professor Ibrahim Al-Duramalli. We do also have Senator, he's a state senator, Larry Shah, coming from North Carolina, and he's a board member also with CARE. He will be joining us on Saturday talking about public service and the importance of participating in public service. And Saturday we will have at 6 p.m. a very special session. We call it Celebrating Their Success. In this session, actually, we have chosen four figures that are well-known nationally, internationally, for their contribution to the society in large. And they happen to be Muslims among the Muslim community. And we would like to recognize them during this session and honor them. For example, Professor Farooq Al-Baz, a scientist and a well-known scientist. Professor Sharif Basuni, our historian brother Hakim Al-Ajwan, and also Senator Larry Shah himself will be honored in that. Shah, who will be honored in that day.
This is going to be a fully packed convention, obviously, with all these scholars and imams.
Even not over the whole thing, but I think it's something very unique about this program. It's really address every group of ages. There's special lectures about teenagers, special lectures for mothers, special lectures for college students. We do have on Sunday, actually, a career fair. That's something I would like to invite all your listener to come. So many people who don't really know much about other careers than doctor or engineer. A lot of people, especially migrated from overseas, these are the only two careers they think of. But we'll try to introduce them another careers that they can be familiar with. They tell their children about, maybe also the high school brothers and sisters who join us to know about it. And we bring people from different professions to introduce these careers to our community.
And when is the career day exactly?
It's going to be on Sunday between 1 to 3, 1 o'clock p.m. to 3 p.m.
That's on the 24th of
December.
That will
be on Sunday, the 24th.
Okay.
Yes.
What, with all these activities that are taking place, is your target only the Islamic societies here, organization, and their Muslim community in Houston, or is it open to everybody and you're inviting everybody regardless of their religion?
We are open to everybody regardless to their religion. And actually, one of the reasons we chose the name of this conference, Islam, a Light for the Ages, because when we look to the message of Islam, which is the Book of Allah, we'll see that Islam is a description to all religions. That's how we Muslim view. We believe that all religion, it means Islam, which means a religion to bring peace to humanity, a religion which should let the person submit himself to God and to be sincere in his action. That's the meaning of the word Islam. And light, because when Allah in Quran described the message of Muhammad, he said, يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسِ قَدْ جَاءَكُمْ بُرْهَانٌ مِّنْ رَبِّكُمْ وَأَنْزَلْنَا إِلَيْكُمْ نُورًا مُّبِينًا. O mankind, verily, there has come to you a clear proof from your Lord, and we have sent to you a light. So this message is a light. It's very unique also when you read about Moses in Quran. Allah said about the Torah that he revealed to Musa. He said, إِنَّا أَنْزَلْنَا التَّوْرَاةَ فِيهَا هُدًى وَنُورٍ. We have revealed the Torah to Moses. Therein was guidance and light. And again, you will find that Allah, when he told us about Jesus, peace be upon him, and Moses, he said, وَآتَيْنَاهُ الْإِنْجِيلَ فِيهِ هُدَى وَنُورٍ. He said, we send him, it means Jesus, we sent him the gospel. Therein was guidance and light. So we see that all religion meant to be light and guidance for humans. I believe as a person involved with the community in different parts of the world, I meet a lot of people. I believe that religion can be sometimes a double-edged sword. When applied out of sincerity to God and in a correct way, according to the way God wants us to be applied in life, the outcome of it will be so good, so much peace and love and happiness and justice for all humanities. However, when the religion is manipulated and used to achieve personal agendas, political power can unfortunately be used as the most dangerous tool to cause distraction in any community. It can be a justification for all these actions which can be done in the name of religion. So I think it's very important for us as leaders of the communities to make sure that when we produce the religion the way that God wants us, the religion will empower our community. It will make our community to enable Muslims to experience the joyful and tranquility lifestyle of Islam, and also we will share this experience with whoever will come to our conference.
Especially at times when the anti-Muslim It's just so much out there for those who watch, especially the corporate media or the mainstream media out there. Everything that happens almost anywhere in the world, they automatically point the finger to Islam or Muslims before they even know who was behind it, or even if it's an individual behind it. If they find out that that person is Muslim, then they immediately point the finger to the Muslim community or to Islam, as if it was behind such heinous attacks or crimes that are committed. What do you... How could you address that point there?
My nature, I always don't like to make my problem somebody else's problem. And I mean by that, I wouldn't blame other people for that. First of all, that's why I learned in my life. First of all, I think that among the Muslims, among us, among this community, I think we should, first of all, help one another in our community. Make sure that... We really understand our religion perfectly. We first learn, and we should come privately, and we dissociate ourselves with anybody try to contribute to our religion which is not from it. That's first. Second, and I think when we do that clearly, and we do that much often, people will learn more about our religion. And I'm saying we should not be apologize for somebody's mistakes if it happened that he's a Muslim. No, but I think we should make sure that we tell people clearly what is Islam is. And I think most of the cases that it happened, or the comments that I hear, it is because people, they don't know what is this religion is. I think people, they don't know Islam. I know so many people I met in my life, and I asked them, what do you know about Islam? Muslims, all what they know is just very little and very wrong even about Islam. And I think we should, as a Muslim community, come out, take every mean and tool possible to tell people about what the religion is, and also to educate our own community about what is Islam really is.
Okay, and to remind the listeners again about this important upcoming convention, tell us again about the dates and the location, please. Sheikh Basim.
Hey, I'm sorry.
Yeah, if you could tell us again for our listeners the date and location of this important convention.
The convention will be at George Brown Convention Center, downtown Houston. And our guests will be staying in Hilton America Hotel in downtown. And this will be December 22nd until 26th. Again in Houston, Texas.
Can you give us the website for that convention for people who want more information?
Sure. We'd love if you're coming to register online, you can log on www.texasdawa.org. It's TexasDawah.org.
And we will have a link to that website on our website, arabvoices.net, after the show. Last comment or last thought, Sheikh Basyuni, that you would like to share with our listeners and everybody who's tuning in about Islam or about the convention?
I know that so many of our community member in Houston and large, they will be so busy in the holiday. And maybe it's not the best time for them to come and to see the Muslim community and to have like a closer look to the Muslim community. But truly, I would like to advise at least this Friday, the 22nd. Friday is a free pass. Anybody will come, he will just walk into that lecture, because I think this topic, which is the role of religion in public life, is something we all share, we all have a concern about. So I invite everybody to come to see it. And also one more thing I would like to say, in the conference will be for the first time an exhibit about Muslims in Texas. And that project, Textile Convention with MSA in Austin, have done together. We documented the life of Muslims in over 38 cities in Texas, around Texas, and to educate our Muslim brothers and also the community in general about Muslims, and that they are part of the society. And we are should act upon that we all share the responsibility of making our country better and stronger.
All right, Sheikh Waleed Basyuni, Imam of the Clear Lake Islamic Center and Director of the Texas Dawah Convention, I want to thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank you, Saeed. Thank you.
Thank you, we appreciate it. Salaam alaikum. And obviously we finished with the first segment of today's show. We will take a short break now, and when we come back, we will talk live with Dr. Seema Gilani, who visited Palestine and Israel and produced a special documentary titled Israel and Palestine, The Human Cost of the Occupation. We will talk to her about this experience and the documentary she produced, and we will even listen to portion of that 3-hour documentary. Stay tuned.
Oh, ya shabi, oh, oh, ya Iraq, marhaban ya ashqa. مرحبا يا أصدقاء مرحبا يا أشقاء مرحبا يا أصدقاء ها هنا الحق نقيض للبكاء نحن لا نملك خبزا ودواء نحن جعنا وجرحنا غير إنا نحمل الجرح بصبر الأنبياء مرحبا يا أشقاء مرحبا يا أصدقاء ها هنا الحق نقيض للبكاء نحن لا نملك خبزا ودواء نحن جعنا وجرحنا غير إنا نحمل الجرح بصبر الأنبياء الحمد لله الذي شرفنا باختبار الصدق في زمن النفاق الحمد لله على كل الظروف الحمد لله الذي شرفنا باختبار الصدق في زمن الرياء الحمد لله على كل الظروف أبلغوا عني هيئات الأمم علها تصنع رادارا جديد يرصد الحب ويخترق الوريد يرصد صوت أبي حين يصلي.
Welcome back to Arab Voices on Houston Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored, commercial-free KPFT 90.1 FM, with live broadcast, podcast, and archive of previous shows online at both kpft.org and arabvoices.net. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices, along with my co-host Mark. We have a few announcements to make as part of Arab Voices community calendar.
The first one is that the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee of Houston is postponing the board elections originally set for December 10th until January of next year. The details are being finalized, and we will announce them and post them on our website as soon as they're available. That website is arabvoices.net.
The Arab American Cultural and Community Center is hosting the 12 nights of Christmas through December 17th. Each night, there will be two hosts, members of the community, and they will sponsor an evening of activities. The hosts will provide complimentary coffee, tea, refreshments, and may provide desserts and food. This invitation is open to all the Houston community. For more details about this and the list of the events and hosts, visit our website at arabvoices.net or call the ACC at 832-351-3366.
The Arab Roots Youth Group is holding a special first annual Winterfest to celebrate its one-year anniversary. The event is an important milestone for this youth group in Houston. They've been active over the past year in community service projects as well as social networking events. The Winterfest will open to the Houston, is actually open to Houston at large, everybody, and there's going to be food, entertainment, sports, and games for everyone who attends. The event will be held on Saturday, December 16th from 1 to 7 p.m. at the ACC. That's at 10555 Stancliffe Road. There will also be an MD Anderson blood donor van present during the event for those interested in donating blood. And that event, again, is the 16th. That's coming up this weekend.
And another reminder of what we've discussed in the first 30 minutes of this show is that the annual Texas Dawa Convention will hold its sixth annual convention from December 22nd through the 26th at the George R. Brown Convention Center. This year's theme is Islam, a Light for the Ages. There will be numerous workshops and prominent speakers covering a wide range of topics about Islam. For more information, visit www.texasdawah.org. That's TexasDawah.org.
The American Druze Society Houston chapter is holding a Eid al-Adha celebration on December 29th at 7:30 p.m. at the Omni Palace. That's at 12121 Westheimer. There'll be dinner, chocolate fountain, professional magic show, and a lot more. For more information, contact the ADS at 713-269-1542 or email them adschapter@houston.rr.com.
And that wraps it up for the Arab Voices Community segment for today's show. But for more detailed information about these events or many other events scheduled in Houston, please visit our website at arabvoices.net. You will also find there links to alternative news and resources about the Arab world, its culture and civilization, as well as resources for Arab Americans and about Arab Americans. That's www.arabvoices.net. And the second segment of today's show will be to talk with Dr. Seema Gilani, who's a local Houstonian who visited Palestine and Israel as part of a delegation with the Jewish American Medical Project, a division of Visions of Peace with Justice in Israel Palestine organization. She has produced a special 3 hours documentary titled Israel and Palestine, The Human Cost of the Occupation, which, by the way, will be run, the 3 hours will be run on KPFT very soon, and she will update us on this shortly. And Seema has also been working as a reporter for KPFT, and Seema is joining us now live in the studio. Welcome again to Arab Voices, Seema.
Thank you. Good evening.
We're pleased to have you with us. We've had you on the show a long time ago when you visited that part of the world, when you visited the occupied Palestinian territories, and you went into Israel with the same organization. Can you give us more information about that trip and how that led you to the 3 hours documentary you just produced again now?
Absolutely. I'd always had an interest in the area because the conflict affects so many arenas of our life here in the United States and globally. And I'd always have an interest in international health and international areas of conflict and the ramifications that conflict has on healthcare. So I had been in touch with this group called the Jewish American Medical Project, and they invited me to go for a stint of time to Israel and the occupied territories. We were also lucky enough to be able to get into Gaza at the time. And I was able to interview, and I also went as a delegate for KPFT Pacifica Radio in here in Houston. So I was able to interview all types of people from all walks of life in both the Israeli society and also the Palestinian society. And I thought, when you go there, you realize that the solution is not a healthcare solution. There's not a lot that, unfortunately, that doctors really can do with that conflict. It's a political solution, and the only way to really work towards that is, I mean, while it's nice that we were able to see patients and treat patients, but the only real solution will be a political solution, and the only way to really get that moving is to bring the stories back that I had witnessed, that I had seen. And I think that's an important part of the documentary, because as much as I'd like to think I can help as a physician, I don't know how possible it is given the circumstances, but it is possible to educate the American public about the circumstances there.
And speaking of the documentary that you produced, we would like to play now portion, a very small portion of that special 3 hours documentary, so our listeners can listen to and understand exactly what you've experienced and what you So on the ground in the occupied Palestinian territories, and then after that we will continue the discussion with you.
Yeah, actually, just wanted to let people know, if you listen on Sunday, you will have heard a few minutes leading up to this, and Sima gave you a little hint before you started today of what this scene starts with. It is in Gaza. Can you just give us a little bit of background so people know what they're listening to when it comes in?
Sure. This was the beginning of our trip to Gaza. I want to remind people that, unlike the West Bank, you actually need to apply for permits from the Israeli government to allow you into the Gaza Strip, which I believe at this time all permits have been stopped. But at that time we were lucky enough to be able to get in, or should I say unlucky? I'm not quite sure. This particular clip illustrates the inhumanity of the occupation, particularly the checkpoints, the Erez checkpoint, which is the largest checkpoint in the country. It's about a mile long. And it also goes through some of our interviews with the co-founder of Physicians for Human Rights Israel, and his special interest is mental health. So it was interesting to hear about the consequences of violence on the mental health of children, and the occupation and the ramifications that has on children in the Gaza Strip. In addition, we also were able to visit Rafah, and where the majority of home demolitions have occurred, specifically where Rachel Corrie was killed as well.
Yeah, there is a mention of that in this clip, and it's about 12 minutes long. It ends with a question that I think should prompt some calls. So if you listen to all of it, and just want to remind you before we start that the entire 3 hours is going to be played this Thursday, the 28th, between noon and 3. So let's just listen to those, and then we'll take some phone calls at the end for as much time as we have left in the show. 713-526-5738. There it is.
It took us about 4 hours total to get through the Erez checkpoint, and there were multiple stops along the way, with many computers, passport scanning, and many confirmations of our visas as well. Dr. Alice Rothschild reflects on her Erez checkpoint experience.
I was struck by how young the Israeli soldiers were. So I was sort of looking at this as, what would this be like to be an Israeli kid at this checkpoint? I was sort of horrified at the amount of construction, and they're building all these pens for Palestinian workers, and the imagery is of cattle. When I was talking with one of the Israeli soldiers who was, I think, was assigned to us as like NGOs, and he was completely unambivalent. He said, you know, there was a suicide bombing here last year. We have to do this. These people deserve it. They need help, but it's not our responsibility. And I was so struck by his complete lack of understanding of what it means to imprison a population. You know, once we got through all the paperwork, and there was this very long walk down this concrete corridor that was surrounded by barbed wire, and that was really creepy, and the analogy to prison was very clear. It was so funny because at the other end were these three soldiers, and we just walked by them, and they made us stop, and I was like so angry that someone else wanted to check another form, and then I realized that they were from the Palestinian Authority. It was just an irony that I forgot on the other end was the Palestinian Authority. And I looked at one of the soldiers, and he looked at me, and our eyes sort of clicked, and he looked at, and then he said, like Dachau, yeah? And it was so, like a sense of shiver down my spine. There was something evocative of that scene in this scene, although it's a totally different scene. That he had the sophistication to get that was just sort of stunning for me. When we left, I found it a bit more emotionally painful because we were with a group of, quote, low-risk people, which were older people. The way that the Israelis had constructed the pens was that you had to stand in front of a speaker, and you were watched by video cameras, so that you had no contact with a human being, which, you know, is the ultimate separation. And, you know, the Israelis would say this is to protect them against suicide bombers. For the people on the other end, it is very dehumanizing to stand in front of the speaker and lift up your shirt and roll up your pants and twirl around and be barked at by this anonymous voice. It was so painful to see these older Palestinian men, you know, with their little brown bellies showing as they sort of had to show that they didn't have any suicide belts. There was an elderly man in a long jalabiya, and he could barely walk. He had a cane, and this man was helping him, and he had to pull the jalabiya over his head, and he was standing there in his little white underwear, and the look on his face was just devastating. And when I think that the few Palestinians that still get to work in Israel, which is a prized job, have to do this twice a day, it's just mind-boggling, and it can take a Palestinian laborer hours to get through this with the same papers every day. And that level of sort of oppressiveness is really appalling. And the thing that happened to me that was very weird, and it happened to several other people on the trip, is that when we stood in front of the speaker and twirled around, the tone of the voice changed, and the man said, "Thank you," in a very civilized tone. And I suddenly had this feeling that he saw the Palestinians as less than human, but he recognized me as a white person, of as a fellow human being, and therefore I got a different tone. The sort of juxtaposition of all these different images and the understanding that this is how you get in and out of this prison was very powerful and very painful.
After the ordeal of getting into the Gaza Strip, we went to meet with Dr. El-Sarraj, who worked with the Nobel Peace Prize nominee Dr. Rochama Marton as an ally in creating Physicians for Human Rights Israel. He is now director of the Gaza Community Mental Health Program, an institution which attempts to reach out to the Gaza community by way of trauma counseling, as well as many other services.
I'm working now on a project for the children to have sea sports. I want to create an atmosphere for the children to go and play in the sea, swim. You know, well, I've just been told, unfortunately, that windsurfing is not allowed in Gaza by the Israelis. It's illegal. And jet ski is not allowed. And boats are not allowed more than nine horsepower.
Yeah.
All these are restrictions, but still, we can teach our children to swim, to play on the sand. This is, you have to create alternatives. UNRWA, the United Nations, refused to allow us access to school because the Israelis said, if you allow the school, you will be in trouble. Because they thought, the Israelis, that we're going to manipulate the children to be militants. They thought that we're going to use the children for political propaganda.
One of the workers there explained to us his personal story.
My sister lost her child. Her child was 7 years old. There was the Israeli tanks that invaded the camp. I live in Khan Yunis camp. My son was standing behind, near this child. And both of them looked to the tank, how it looks. The older boys, you know, and the men don't look directly for the tank because they're afraid that the soldier will shoot them. Because they are children, 7 years, and they don't know what it means, what it the tank do, you know. And they shoot them, and her son was killed, 7 years old. His name is Hussein Abu Akar. He was killed. My son was psychologically disturbed, you know. He 3 days he has nightmare recalling the event. I said that we lost Hussein, but we have to save Ali. When he started to complain and to tell me that he has dreams, nightmares about the event, I'm afraid that he will develop PTSD. And he is traumatized, sure. He is traumatized.
A student doing her postdoctoral work on trauma in the Gaza Strip explained the effects of the conflict.
There are still ongoing trauma that will last for a while, even after the withdrawal takes place. Being in a post-conflict period doesn't mean that we have just eliminated or got rid of all the effects of what have been going on for the last 4 years. So there will be more work with the traumatized children and with the communities, even after the withdrawal.
Later, we were able to visit the Jabalia refugee camp with Dr. Izzeldin, who explained its importance to us.
The largest camp among the Palestinian refugee camps in their diaspora. The population of the camp are about 100,000 people living in this camp.
Refugees from 48?
Yes. The tanks were here, and they went inside the camp and demolished all of those places, the houses, and you will see now the houses. It's shocking to see, look here, the wolves.
And the people were in the houses when they were shelling them?
Yes, of course. Yeah, those are the gunfires.
Yeah,
the bullets here. All of this on the walls. This is a mosque. The walls of the schools, of UNRWA schools, it has been destroyed.
A refugee status is a legal status, but they then become official refugees that stay in the camps. The people who were deported and are in refugee camps in 48 and 67, they're two sets of refugees. They live in camps that UNRWA has the responsibility for them because they have refugee status.
The regular practice of Palestinian home demolitions and the uprooting of trees has had catastrophic effects on the population of the Gaza Strip. In 2004 alone, 1,304 homes have been destroyed, with approximately 13,000 persons made homeless. Since September 2000, 2,389 homes have been destroyed, making approximately 23,000 persons homeless in total. In addition, the Israeli army incursions have seriously injured water, sewage, and power networks. According to the World Bank, physical damage to the occupied territory water and wastewater sector from Israeli military actions is valued at about $140 million. As of 2004, poverty rate in the Gaza Strip based on World Bank data was 65%. Those who cannot afford or hardly afford the basics of survival was 23%. In the latter half of 2004, approximately 63% of all households in occupied Palestinian territory were living below the poverty line. This means that over 2.2 million people were attempting to subsist on less than $2 per person, which puts them below the World Bank's globally defined poverty line. Refugees from 1948 and 1967 have been the hardest hit, since they have been the most dependent on labor in Israel, which has, in recent years, been hampered as a result of repeated Israeli army incursions. UNRWA studies revealed that anemia rates in the Gaza Strip were as high as 54.7% among children and approximately 45% among nursing mothers. The rates of post-traumatic stress disorder in children in the Gaza Strip has skyrocketed in the last years. Approximately 30% of all children in the Gaza Strip have post-traumatic stress disorder, while another 20% reveal symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. Later that week, we were able to visit Rafah, the site where Rachel Corrie, a young American woman, was killed by Israeli bulldozers while protesting the demolition of a home. There is now a kindergarten named after her in Rafah. Dr. Rothschild tells me what was going through her mind as she stood in the middle of the home demolitions in Rafah.
Rafah was where I basically lost it. I couldn't stop crying. I was so appalled at the level of devastation, and in the rubble was the toys and shoes and belongings of people who basically fled. The vividness of the bulldozer coming in the middle of the night, or the Apache helicopter and the mother grabbing her kids and running, and was so clear to me, and so intolerable as a, you know, whoever's idea was, it just seemed so egregiously wrong. And, you know, the number of people that were made homeless and more poverty stricken and all those kinds of things were so clear, and it was so painful. Well, that's how I walked through the rubble of Rafah. It was just a devastating experience.
We were also able to go to a school in Gaza, funded by the United Nations Relief and Works Agency. We answered questions and conversed with Palestinian students in a classroom setting.
Why do they think America is the enemy?
Back Israel.
Do they think it's the American government that's the enemy, or the American people that's the enemy?
That's right. The American government.
American government. Mm-hmm. Do they have any questions for us?
Why do you back Israel?
Why do we back Israel? You can tell them that we're a group of Jews who do not back the policy of Israel, and that's why we're here.
We're trying to get our government to change its policy of supporting the Israeli government. But it's difficult to change the policy of our government, just like it's difficult to change the policy of many governments. You could also tell them that the reason the American people aren't more in support of the Palestinian people is because they don't know, because our news media doesn't tell us. That's why we're here, so we can tell the people.
Why you consider Israel above law?
It ends on that question. Why these kids, Sima, how old are they?
The range of age was 8 to 12.
And they're obviously politically aware if they're asking questions like why the U.S. public supports this and why America considers Israel above the law. I guess that would get some phones ringing, and in fact, the first one is starting to ring. So I'll start taking the phone side. I'll leave it with you until I can pick up some phone calls.
Okay, well, that number is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. And again, what we've listened to is just a small portion of a 3 hours documentary that Dr. Seema Gilani did when she went to Palestine and Israel to talk about the human cost of the occupation. By the way, that in 3 hours documentary will be aired on Thursday, December 28th from 12 noon to 3 p.m. Again, mark your calendar. That's December 28th from 12 noon until 3 p.m. 713-526-5738 is the number. So I'm sure we're going to have some phone calls for you, Seema. What is your personal reaction when you went there and what you've witnessed on the ground? What is your reaction?
Well, I had read in reports about the various sort of things that have been occurring, but you don't really realize what's going on until you see it on the ground for yourself. And when you see it on the ground yourself, it makes a big difference. And it's different to go to read about a checkpoint in the New York Times, and it's different to go through a checkpoint and be herded like cattle and be spoken to roughly and abruptly and just be looked at as if you're in something inhuman and be humiliated at various checkpoints.
713-526-5738, because we only have about 10 minutes left. I'm sure we're going to have... we want to give our listeners the opportunity to ask questions. Let's go ahead and take our first caller.
Yeah, that would be Sue. Sue, go ahead. Are you there?
Sue, are you there?
There are people talking.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, we missed the beginning of what you said, if you could start over.
I said, thanks for your program. I'm enjoying it thoroughly. I'll make it quick. First of all, thank God for Jimmy Carter, one of the few godly men that we've ever had in office. Loved his book. I have a lot of friends from the Middle East. A cousin even that's been involved in this fascist Jewish movement in Israel. I'd like to know simply why we don't talk about the nuclear bombs that Israel has not come forward about for many years. And why is it they're allowed not to sign a proliferation treaty?
Good question, Sue. Thank you. Seema, where do you want to go with that?
I think it touches on the topic that 8-year-old kids in Gaza were asking. Why is Israel above the law? I want to reiterate that I'm a physician. I went there as a physician. I went there as a civilian. So for me to even speculate on the politics behind that would be presumptuous. I will say that I think there's a very... there's a strong supporting and a political backing within Congress for whatever reasons. And it's time that one thing I will say, the positive that I gained from this experience, is it's time that people that think with different perspectives get together and maybe we can have some lobbying of our own and move for positive change. We all know what the problem is. And now it's our job to take it to other people and say, listen, this is what I've been hearing. This is what I've been seeing on the ground. Or I met this doctor. She went to Israel. And it's actually very different than what you've been hearing on CNN. And it's my job and your job to just talk to people about it and educate the public, because it's unfortunate that we don't get the news that save KPFT. Other than this, we really don't get an idea of what's going on the ground.
Well, speaking of educating the public, what Sue was mentioning, for those who are not familiar with this yet, she talked about President Carter, and thanks to God for President Carter. What she's referring to is the new book that President Carter authored, that's called Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid, where he details the Palestinian-Israeli issue and he puts in recommendations for how to resolve the problem. And he has some bold statements. He has made some bold statements there, clearly talking about the Israeli apartheid wall and how it's cutting the Palestinian territories and societies into pieces and shredding them, and the Israeli treatment of the Palestinian, and it goes on and on, and the escalation of attacks on Palestinians and the murder of the Palestinian kids and so on. So he details that in a book called Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid. By the way, we are still working on getting President Carter to be live on the show to talk about his book. Another thing she mentioned, nuclear weapons. Some of you may have heard over the past few days, the Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert whether intentionally or unintentionally, mentioned Israel as possessing weapons of mass destruction, basically nuclear weapons. Well, that's truly irrelevant. Israel has never come out to say how what things they have or what they don't have, and what difference would it make? They are still standing in violation of over 60 or 70 United Nations security resolutions. Israel possesses nuclear weapons. And Mordechai Vanunu, the Israeli whistleblower, Israeli nuclear whistleblower, said that many times. He was jailed 18 years in Israeli prison for saying that. We've had him live on this show twice. And he revealed to us, and he talked to us about the Israeli nuclear arsenal. You can go to our website to listen to that archive of that show, by the way.
Sorry to interrupt you. We only have like 3 minutes left, and I want to try and squeeze in a couple more calls
if we can.
So we'll go to our next caller, and that would be Adnan. Adnan, are you there?
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I just have a question to your guest that what is the psychological condition in Israel, in Israeli? Because when you are committing these kind of atrocities again and again and again for such a long period, so people become, I think people become animal, right? So what she's saying about that thing? Thank you.
Yeah, it's an excellent question. In Israel, it's actually very surprising. Most of the Jewish population in Israel wants an end to the occupation themselves. They don't want their tax dollars funding an occupation. They want their tax dollars funding their own social services and health services and education. It's actually a very different story when you come to speak to the American Jewish population, because the American Jewish population doesn't have to deal with suicide bombings. And so when you talk to a lot of the Israeli, no matter how sort of right-wing they are, many of them will actually say, well, we want out of the West Bank just as anybody else does. It's unfortunate that people like Ehud Olmert do not take that into consideration. But the psychological reality of it is these are people that live in, you have to remember the size. The size of this area is absolutely tiny. So they live in these cramped quarters, yet I met someone that lived for 30 years in Israel and never met a Palestinian. I never met a Palestinian. That's like not ever driving to San Antonio, okay, or even closer. So they don't see it, and that's how you can protect yourself psychologically. Now, on the other hand, when you have IDF reservists go into the army and finally have to face their quote-unquote enemy in checkpoints, they come back with very haunting stories and how they feel about what they're doing to the Palestinians. That's a different story. The average Israeli will never meet a Palestinian, either because they don't want to or they don't have to, and they don't have to deal with it. The more you can ignore it, the more you don't have to sort of face what your government is doing. However, there are stories. I met with an Israeli psychiatrist who was a therapist for several members in the IDF who served at checkpoints, and they have very haunting memories. And because they are oppressing a people, they themselves feel... and this is not something I'm saying, I want to make that clear. Yeah, they themselves liken it to being part of the Gestapo. So that's some of the things that they themselves are wrestling with. I'll leave it at that.
Well, we only have about a minute left. I just wanted to try and point out as well that there is more per capita spending per Israeli citizen from your tax dollars than there is on you, U.S. citizens. Maybe we have time to squeeze in a quick comment from our final caller, and that would be Sean. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
If you could make it quick, please, because we're almost out of time.
Yes, of course. Sima, you sound very young. I just wanted to see from the perspective of a young person. What do you see the future of young Palestinian women being? I mean, is it still hopeful, or are they losing hope, and where do you see yourself promoting any way to help them?
Wow, in 10 seconds or less, please.
Okay, I was more optimistic before I went there. Let's put it that way. I came back very depressed, and even now I spoke with the people there, and they are painting a very dismal picture. People are losing hope, especially after the Lebanon crisis. It's unfortunately, I wish I could say more, but it's a dismal picture. I did want to say one last thing, that we can complain all we would like about the atrocities that the Israelis are doing, but it's our job to change our government. I'm not an Israeli, you're not an Israeli, but we can change our government.
Yes, and that's all the time we have for this evening. Many thanks to Dr. Sima Gilani. We appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. And
thanks for handling the rapid fire
sure.
time crunch here. But thanks for being here.
And don't forget to tune in to listen to her 3-hour special documentary titled Israel and Palestine, The Human Cost of the Occupation, that will air on this station, KPFT 90.1 FM, on Thursday, December 28th. From 12 noon to 3 p.m. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices. Thanks for listening, and many thanks to my co-host Mark. Until we meet next Wednesday, peace on earth.
March of 2005, I went to Israel and Palestine with a group of Jewish physicians from the Jewish American Medical Project, which is a group whose aim is to facilitate peace in the Middle East through healthcare and counseling. I produced a documentary on my trip, which covered topics ranging from checkpoints on the wall to healthcare and the refusenik movement. I talked to people on both sides of this complex conflict, and the results were astounding. The documentary will now be airing a year later once again, except this time I am now a physician myself, and I have also recorded a follow-up interview from the West Bank, which updates us on the current situation. Please tune in to my gripping look at reality in the occupied territories entitled Israel and Palestine, The Human Cost of the Occupation by Dr. Seema Jalani.
This program airs as a 3-hour special presentation on December 28th from noon to 3 p.m. KPFT will preempt regular programming for this broadcast. Again, that's Thursday, December 28th, noon to 3 on KPFT, Houston.
Listeners support KPFT in many different ways. Some write checks and others use credit cards, but if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat, or truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and, at the same time, take care of that unfinished business. To make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 1-877-803-2408. We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's that simple to support the station you've come to rely on for alternative music, news, and public affairs programming. Again, for more information or to make a donation...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.